Chapter 23, A House Divided. Obi-Wan left the room on Bail Organa's 5th or 6th, but are you sure? He stepped quietly around the edge of the battered table, catching a knowing smile from Padme, who was seated a little ways down from Queen Amidala and had been getting plenty of panicked looks from Bail herself. Unlike Obi-Wan, she didn't have the option of escaping. Anakin, who as a complete non-entity in this universe, wouldn't have made much of an impression on Bail anyway, had sidestepped the whole business by going with the Naboo Marines, who had brought the Jedi prisoners back on board. Amidala glanced up as Obi-Wan made to leave, the guard at the door tensing slightly until the Queen made a nearly imperceptible gesture of acceptance. Obi-Wan inclined his head slightly in acknowledgement, twitching a finger at the door to open it, and went out into the narrow corridor of the twilight, pausing for a moment to get his bearings and consider his options. Annie Skywalker's Twilight might have the same name and the same shell as Anakin's ship of the same name, but Annie had almost completely rebuilt the interior, and Obi-Wan kept getting turned around because his mental map of the ship didn't match up with the reality. He could sense Anakin elsewhere in the ship, Annie holed up in the cockpit, and in the Twilight's makeshift brig, the 3 captive Jedi Knights. Luminara Unzuli, and Eeth Koth, whom Queen Amidala had brought with them from Naboo, and Kit Fisto, who had been transferred from custody aboard the Indomitable when they had left the First Fleet. Obi-Wan was fairly certain he knew why the Queen had insisted on bringing the Jedi along with them on their way to Alderaan, even if she hadn't said as much, despite repeated inquiries from the various members of her entourage and Ani's muttered protests. He didn't think that the Queen's plan had a hope of succeeding under the circumstances, but he understood why she felt she had to try. From his impression in the Force, Anakin wasn't in the mood for company, and Obi-Wan didn't yet feel like prodding at that tangle of Trelica roots anyway, so he turned in the direction of the makeshift brig. He passed 2 separate groups of Naboo on the way there, a knot of RNSFC pilots and their astromech droids lounging in a converted cargo hold, and several Queen's guards in another cargo hold. A Twi'lek female asleep on a cot, and her companions playing sabacc on the floor. The Twi'lek hadn't been designed as a passenger vessel, but Ani had made enough modifications that it could do so in a pinch. Anakin had declared himself reluctantly impressed, and then sulked about it the entire journey from Naboo to Dalling, which Obi-Wan had taken to mean that he was starting to feel like himself again. Since Ani was a smuggler rather than a bounty hunter, he didn't have anything resembling a proper holding area on his ship, let alone one that was capable of restraining 3 trained Jedi Knights. The Naboo had made do with the secure cargo hold that Ani normally used for especially valuable cargoes and several portable ray shield generators. They hadn't asked for Obi-Wan's help, and he hadn't offered it, a little uneasy at the circumstances, though conscious of their necessity. It was certainly a less comfortable prison than the well-guarded suite where Luminara and Eeth had been housed in Theed, or the stateroom Kit had been granted on the Indomitable, but otherwise little different than the converted holds where the various members of the Queen's entourage were sleeping for the duration of the trip. The only entrance to the makeshift brig was guarded by half a dozen Naboo Marines who had come over from the Indomitable. They weren't wearing their battle armor, but they still filled the narrow corridor, leaning against the walls or sitting on the floor with their blasters at hand. Two were clones, the others Naboo regulars, human and otherwise. Not for the first time, Obi-Wan wondered where Queen Amidala and Captain Kenobi had done their recruiting. Aside from the Gungans, Naboo didn't have a particularly large non-human population. They all looked up as Obi-Wan approached, though only the ranking non-commissioned officer rose to her feet. Her eyes narrowed as she looked him up and down. Then she said, "So it's true." Even if there hadn't been only one thing she could be talking about, the overtones in the Force would have told Obi-Wan what she meant. "Yes, it's true," he said, glancing at her rank insignia. "Master Sergeant Eleni Kaber, Royal Naboo Marine Corps." She didn't salute, just watched him with wary attention. "Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi," he introduced himself, leaving off the rest of his official rank, since the fact that he was one of the highest-ranking generals in the Grand Army of the Republic was no longer relevant, and probably wouldn't have gone over well even if it had been. Her mouth quirked slightly as some of the other Marines muttered to each other. "Yes, I know," she said. She looked at the hatch to the secure hold and added, "You're cleared to go in, but you have to take an escort. I'll come." The seated Marines looked at each other again, but none of them tried to contradict her in front of Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan just said, "Very well," and stood back as she tapped the security code into the control panel. The door slid open with a hiss of releasing air, revealing the humming ray shields that had been set up inside. The cargo hold wasn't a large one, but it wasn't small either. There was enough space between the outer edge of the ray shields and the walls that Obi-Wan and Master Sergeant Kaber could stand comfortably without being incinerated. At some point, Ani must have smuggled passengers as well as cargo in here, because the room was outfitted with a small refresher that wouldn't be comfortable to share among three people, but was better than the alternative. Of the three Jedi inside the ray shields, Eeth Koth was sitting in a corner in a meditative posture, while Luminata Unduli was reclining on a cot, her broken leg extended before her. Kit Fisto sat beside her, looking rather the worse for wear after his capture on the Republic flagship. They had been talking to each other, but the words trailed off as the door opened and Obi-Wan came in. Master Sergeant Kaber followed him inside, hitting the controls to shut the door behind her and standing back against the wall, her blaster rifle held at port arms. Eeth Koth and Kit Fisto both got to their feet, while Luminara sat up slowly, resting both hands on her bad knee. Obi-Wan knew that it had been broken during her encounter with Captain Kenobi and Queen Amidala, but didn't know any of the details. By now, it must have been mostly healed. Jedi healed faster than most species. But it would still be weak and tender for some time yet. The arm that Obi-Wan had broken during the Battle of Odrin still ached in wet weather, or when he had been using it too intensely, since although he'd had it seen to at the Halls of Healing in the Jedi Temple, he'd rebroken it almost immediately, and hadn't had time to get it completely healed again before being deployed. Luminara probably wasn't much better off, though it had been long enough that she could probably walk again. Fighting was almost certainly out of the question. "Master Kenobi," Eeth Koth said, "I was wondering if we would see you or your young companion again." It had come out during their initial meeting that Eeth had actually been the knight who had run into Ani Skywalker on Christophsis and tried to take him into custody, which hadn't particularly endeared him to Anakin. Whatever his own private doubts on the matter happened to be, Anakin was unmistakably a Jedi knight in the Force. And Obi-Wan knew that despite his personal misgivings, in the Force, he himself would read as nothing less than a Jedi Master. Even Dooku had, albeit one twisted and corrupted by the dark side. Darth Vader had as well, though Obi-Wan hadn't realized it during their initial encounter. It had taken him weeks to work out why Vader had felt so familiar to him in the Force, and even then, he only guessed half the story. Palpatine hadn't felt that way, of course. He had never been a Jedi, and he had been supremely skilled at hiding his own Force presence in a way that Obi-Wan had only seen a handful of times before in the Jedi shadows. Knights and masters who did most of their work undercover, in places where open Jedi were seldom welcome. When he had finally revealed himself in his dying, Obi-Wan had recognized what he was, a puzzle piece snapping into place far too late for him to do anything about it. And millions had died. Perhaps were dying even now, for his failure. Obi-Wan spread his hands in a placatory gesture. I'm afraid Master Skywalker is otherwise engaged, though the Force alone knew what Anakin was doing at the moment. But I am here, yes. He glanced at Kit, who he hadn't had the opportunity to see before. The Natolan Jedi was watching him with wary confusion, though there was no real hostility in it. He had to be able to tell that Obi-Wan wasn't the Obi-Wan Kenobi that he knew. Without having met Captain Kenobi, Obi-Wan couldn't be certain, but he strongly suspected that he and his counterpart felt very different in the Force, if for no reason than because Obi-Wan was a Jedi Master, and his counterpart had resigned before being knighted. Are you familiar with Master Fisto? Ithkoth asked, inclining his head in Kit's direction. We're acquainted in my own universe, Obi-Wan said. Kit was a few years older than him, and had been knighted when Obi-Wan was still a Padawan, but they had been in the same cohort as younglings, and they had been appointed to the council within months of each other. Obi-Wan would have called them friends. In this universe, he had no idea what his counterpart's relationship with Kit Fisto was, though presumably everything up to the occupation of Naboo had remained the same. That had been a long time ago, though. He nodded to Kit. I'm Master Obi-Wan Kenobi of the Jedi Order. You've been informed? I have, Kit said, his voice faintly sibilant, the way Natolan's voices always were. He considered Obi-Wan with the huge, unblinking black eyes that were characteristic of his species, probing gently and unobtrusively with the Force. Obi-Wan let his shields flex against the pressure of Kit's mind, raising an eyebrow in response. Kit grinned suddenly, teeth showing white against his green skin. Well, you're something, all right. The Obi-Wan Kenobi I know nearly snapped my head off when I tried that on him. Of course, he was the one in a cell then. Behind Obi-Wan, Master Sergeant Cobber stirred very slightly, her attention sharpening in the Force. If he was well enough to slap you out of his mind, he can't have been too badly off despite the setting, Obi-Wan said mildly. He didn't know if Kit had said anything to the Naboo, but his money was on no. It was difficult, though not impossible, to force a Jedi to admit to something they didn't want to reveal. Kit paused before answering. The Trade Federation's battle droids beat the stuffing out of him, he said at last, his voice very deliberate. But other than that, he was well enough when Paladin left the fleet. Mouthy as ever. Eeth and Luminara were both watching him. If Kit was made self-conscious by their attention, he didn't show it. But Obi-Wan supposed he didn't have much to worry about. Captain Kenobi's arrest had been weeks ago. By now, he had to be back on Coruscant, probably locked in the high security cells in the temple underlevels. Obi-Wan had no idea what the Council would decide to do with him. He had been privy to the discussion of what would be done with captured Force users like Ventress or Opress, even Dooku himself. But none of that had ever become anything other than theoretical. And that had been wartime. As far as he was aware, This Jedi Council only had one Force-sensitive enemy in mind, not the many they had been faced with back in his own universe. Mouthy is certainly an epithet I'm familiar with, Obi-Wan said, clasping his hands behind his back, as well as several less polite variations on that theme. Well, that certainly sounds like the Obi-Wan Kenobi I know, Luminara said. Obi-Wan smiled. Some things are universal, perhaps. Though I haven't had the opportunity to meet my counterpart and find out if there's anything else we have in common. Kit's gaze, hard as it was to tell since Natolans didn't have pupils, went to the lightsaber on Obi-Wan's hip. Do you mind? He asked, out of curiosity. Obi-Wan didn't have to ask what he meant. He had seen the hollows of Captain Kenobi's white lightsaber. He took his hilt off his belt and depressed the trigger, angling the blade to one side so that it didn't strike the ray shield as it ignited. Jedi weren't the only people who could carry blue or green, or purple in Master Windu's case, or the archaic yellow saber staffs carried by the Temple Guards, lightsabers, but it was uncommon to find anyone else who did. In all likelihood, anyone other than a Jedi who carried one had taken it from a dead Jedi. General Grievous was proof enough of that. Of course, Obi-Wan hadn't heard anything about Grievous in this universe. In all likelihood, he did exist, but it was entirely possible he did so in some other form. Perhaps even his original, unaltered body. Now there was a strange thought. The three Jedi considered his blade thoughtfully. Luminara and Eeth hadn't seen it before, since he and Anakin had been forbidden to visit them armed in Theed. After a moment, Obi-Wan deactivated his lightsaber and returned it to his belt. Satisfied? That doesn't prove anything, young Obi-Wan, Eeth pointed out gently. Obi-Wan crossed his arms over his chest, realizing a beat too late that the gesture might be interpreted as defensiveness. No, he said. I didn't expect it to do anything of the sort. But you did ask. So I did, Kit agreed. And this Sith artifact I've heard so much about. I'm afraid I don't have it on me, Obi-Wan said. Since neither Master Skywalker nor I are entirely certain how it works, it seemed unwise for either of us to carry a dark artifact on our persons, especially as there has already been some small proof that it may react oddly to a Jedi attempting to use it. That was an understatement, considering what had happened on Odrin and again on Coruscant. Very convenient, Luminara remarked. Obi-Wan arched an eyebrow. Not terribly so, he said. I'm sure you agree, Master Unduli, that treating a dark artifact like a spare lightsaber component is hardly wise. And what was a Jedi Knight doing with a dark artifact? Kit asked, the insinuation laced through the Force. A Jedi Master, Obi-Wan corrected. He didn't usually push his rank, but he had earned it by whatever standards any Jedi in the Order wanted to use, and right now it was one more mark of difference between him and Captain Kenobi. Mastery wasn't just an empty title, either. Obi-Wan had worked for that rank, and even if he knew he'd been jumped up at least 5 years before he probably should have been, just as Anakin should have had a few more years of apprenticeship, he had still earned it. He could tell from the eddies in the Force that Kit and Luminara were still in their knighthood, not the mastery they had both attained in his own universe. Eeth, of course, had been a master on the High Council since Obi-Wan had been a Padawan. You're aware of the Covenant Horde? The Covenant Horde is a myth, Eeth corrected gently, as if he had caught Obi-Wan in a lie. If it ever did exist, it was destroyed nearly 4,000 years ago. Not destroyed, merely lost, Obi-Wan said. In our own universe, an archaeological team from the University of Alderaan found it while excavating a site on the planet of Odrin. Master Skywalker and I were sent by the Council to retrieve the artifacts and bring them back to the temple, where they could be assessed for viability and safely contained. Neither of us considered that the presence of a Jedi Knight might trigger an already unstable device. He and Anakin had agreed that, for the time being, glossing over the Clone Wars was probably wise, as there was no easy way to explain away the difference in combatants between universes, or that the Count Dooku of their universe was a Sith Lord, something that didn't seem to be true here. A fine story. A true one, Obi-Wan said. More or less. He hadn't even been able to give the Council and the Supreme Chancellor an accurate account of what had actually happened on Odrin after Anakin had triggered the Ouroboros, though he hadn't known that was what it was at the time. Obi-Wan remembered the battle in flashes of pain and horror, unable to strain together a memory longer than a few seconds until he had been back on Resolute, where he had found himself leaning against the wall with Cody on one side of him and Rex on the other, and a clone medic trying to talk to him. He knew that someone had called for the evacuation, but couldn't remember if it had been him or someone else. He remembered dueling Darth Vader across the burning wreckage of the village, but not the moment when he had broken his arm. He didn't remember the clones distracting Vader long enough that Rex and Cody had been able to drag him onto a gunship. He did remember the tear in his mind, as Anakin had been ripped out of the Force, the psychic backlash strong enough to knock him off the moving tank he had been standing on. Without meaning to, Obi-Wan touched his fingers to the nearly invisible line of scar tissue that ran from his forehead along the left side of his face, before terminating near his ear. By now, it had been long enough that his hair had grown back to cover it. Anakin had never remarked on it, which Obi-Wan hoped meant that he hadn't noticed its existence. But Obi-Wan didn't even remember gashing his head open. Cody had told him that he'd bounced off the side of the tank and hit a swoop bike on the way down. Obi-Wan didn't remember any of it. He had still been bleeding, staining the shoulder of his robes scarlet, when they reached the village and found the blast zone. What remained of Anakin's troops, and Darth Vader cutting a swath through them. He looked up at Obi-Wan, standing there on the edge of the crater, and the Force had turned over. Obi-Wan remembered that, at least, even if he didn't remember much else of the battle. Remembered that instant of blinding, impossible recognition, had the vague memory of Anakin's name on his lips and his lightsaber in his hand, blood clotting on the side of his face, and Vader had looked up at him. He had said Obi-Wan's name. It was the first time Obi-Wan had realized that, but he felt the memory slot into place along with all the rest. Still a great, mostly blank blur, but one more piece of the puzzle. Obi-Wan wasn't sure whether or not he ever wanted to remember everything that had happened that day. He must have been silent a beat too long, because Luminara said, "Is something the matter, Master Kenobi?" Obi-Wan took his hand away from his forehead, pushing his hair back from his face instead, and knowing that the gesture wouldn't be mistaken for anything other than what it was. "Just an unpleasant memory," he said. "Sith artifacts don't exactly take kindly to users of the light side of the Force interfering with them, even by accident." "And what artifact was this, precisely?" Eeth Koth asked. "Do you know?" "I do, actually," Obi-Wan said. "It's the Ouroboros of Jor Mungar." Eeth jerked back on his heels. Obi-Wan knew that he had made a hobby out of the academic study of Force artifacts. "There is no record of the Ouroboros among the Covenant Horde." "Our records of the Covenant Horde are far from complete," Obi-Wan said. They were compiled by a Padawan who didn't have access to the Covenant's own files, and damaged further in the sacking of Coruscant 300 years later. The Jedi High Council at the time agreed that they were probably hundreds of artifacts unaccounted for. Without access to the Covenant's files, most of which have been lost or destroyed since the Mandalorian Wars, there's no way to know exactly what was in the Covenant Hoard. Aeth actually looked a little reassured by this recitation, probably because it was the sort of detail that no one who wasn't a Jedi would be able to get a hold of. Probably anyone who wasn't a Jedi wouldn't be interested in it, either. Kit looked between them, frowning a little. "What is the Ouroboros of Jorul Mungar?" he asked. "And who exactly is Jorul Mungar?" "Jorul Mungar was a Sith Lord who lived 5,000 years ago," Aeth said. "A dark side philosopher, according to the records in the Jedi Temple, though some argue that he was actually a Grey Jedi." "If he was, there's no trace of that left in the Ouroboros," Obi-Wan said. "That device is pure dark energy. It's inimical to the Jedi." "It would be interesting to ascertain this for ourselves," Luminara noted, her expression bland. Obi-Wan could feel the beginnings of a headache starting to pound in his temples, undoubtedly related to the subtle mental pressure all three Jedi were putting on him. Kit's initial probe had been rebuffed, but there was more than one way to skin a Gundark. Obi-Wan could feel their approaches in the Force, each one unique and complementary to the others. At the moment, they were all sliding off his shields, but if they kept on, there was a good chance that either they would break through, or Obi-Wan would snap back, purposefully or otherwise. It was the otherwise he was concerned with. His control had been slowly but steadily slipping ever since Odrin, even after Anakin's return. And he simply didn't know what that meant, either for himself or for anyone unfortunate enough to be around him at the time. He almost craved the solidarity of the Order, but what had always been welcome to him, what had been home and family since before he had known the words, had increasingly become alienating and hostile over the long years of the war. The Jedi Order was all that Obi-Wan had ever known, but something about this war had broken it long before Palpatine had given his dying orders. He ran a hand over his beard, considering Luminara through the white glimmer of the containment shield. "I'm sure it would be," he said, "but you understand why that isn't possible at the moment. If you and your young friend are Jedi in service to the Republic," Kit asked, and something about the way he said it, maybe it was the "in service to the Republic," which Obi-Wan had heard hundreds of times before, but never with that particular twist of the words, made Obi-Wan shift, his fingers twitching idly for the Force before he stopped himself. Kit's head tresses lifted inquisitively in an Atollan gesture that meant Obi-Wan's reaction had been noted, and he went on mildly. "Then why is it that you went to the Separatists, not the Jedi? Despite your counterpart, the Order would have welcomed you. The Temple is ever a haven for Jedi, no matter their circumstances." "Because the Temple burned and Anakin screamed," Obi-Wan thought. "Because when I told Yoda I was leaving, I meant it. Because Padme asked to come to Naboo." "Instead," he said, "that was my decision." He gestured towards himself, keeping his expression self-deprecating. "I'm sure you can see why we thought it might be wiser to come to Naboo, under the circumstances." "It seems some things do not change between universes," Aeth remarked. Obi-Wan arched an eyebrow. "No matter what the universe, Obi-Wan Kenobi will always be led by Padme Amidala's hand on his dick," Aeth said, and smirked. Master Sergeant Cobber, silent throughout the entire conversation, took a step forward. You little... Obi-Wan put out a hand to stop her, though he wasn't certain if she halted because of the gesture, or because she was used to automatically obeying anyone whose name happened to be Obi-Wan Kenobi. "That is unfair both to me and to Senator Amidala," he said. "I'll grant you that you don't know either of us, Master Koth, but a Jedi Master ought to know better than to make those kinds of assumptions based on a paucity of evidence. I am not Captain Kenobi, and Senator Amidala is not the Queen. Master Skywalker certainly isn't Captain Skywalker." "That," Luminara said, glaring at Eeth before she turned her attention back to Obi-Wan, "is evident." There was no way for one Jedi to mistake another in the Force, and very few ways to conceal what you were when it went as soul deep as Jedi were meant to be. Jedi were born, not trained, not truly. Even a Jedi come late to the Order was still a Jedi. Kit didn't say anything, considering Obi-Wan thoughtfully. Eeth shrugged, folding his arms across his chest. "I've seen very little yet to demonstrate the differences," he said. "Though I admit it seems an unnecessarily elaborate ploy for no evident gain." "Yes," Obi-Wan said dryly, "it would be. I assure you, Master Koth, this story is far too unlikely to manufacture. Even a holovid producer would dismiss it." "Probably not enough sex," part of his brain filled in automatically, and Obi-Wan had to bite his lip to keep from choking out a laugh. There was a big difference between probably not enough and none. Luminara must have caught that thought in the Force, because her mouth twitched a little as she tried not to smile. Obi-Wan had gotten the impression that she and Captain Kenobi had spoken a little over the years, though not with anything resembling regularity, but it hadn't stopped her from accepting this mission when the Council had offered it to her. Luminara was a good Jedi. She always put the Order above everything else, even her own apprentice. Neither Obi-Wan nor Anakin had ever been able to do the same. "Where's Barriss?" he said suddenly, the thought striking him. "Padawan Authie didn't accompany you to Naboo, did she?" All three Jedi had gone still, staring at him as though they hadn't expected Obi-Wan to know such specific details. "Barriss remained on Coruscant," Luminara said after a moment. "You know her?" "Yes, of course," Obi-Wan said, and forbore saying that he'd spent the better part of a day arguing first with the Council and then with the Supreme Chancellor over whether the Jedi got jurisdiction over her or whether the Gar did. He'd done his best for Barriss, even though he had lost in the end, since what had happened with Ahsoka had already set a precedent. "She and Master Skywalker's former Padawan used to be friends." Kit made a gesture of surprise. "Skywalker seems very young to have a Padawan." "So was I," Obi-Wan said. "Anakin more or less turned out all right." "You trained..." Eeth stopped mid-sentence, shaking his head. "Who was Skywalker's Padawan?" Obi-Wan hesitated, but he couldn't see any harm in giving them that piece of information. "Ahsoka Tano." "Plo Koon's Padawan?" "In this universe," Obi-Wan said, shrugging slightly. "Not in ours." It wasn't normal for the Council to assign Padawans. Obi-Wan didn't know whose decision that had been, or even if the rest of the Council had had a vote, because he certainly hadn't been consulted, and his own appointment to the Council had still been fairly new at that point, and largely predicated on Anakin's knighthood. From a few hints Plo had dropped afterwards, he'd gotten the impression that Plo had been planning on taking Ahsoka as his own Padawan before Yoda had decided otherwise. Obi-Wan didn't know if Anakin had ever realized that. He probably hadn't wanted to. Obi-Wan pushed a hand back through his hair, blinking as Kit said suddenly, You and your friends were the individuals that Master Kun and his Padawan encountered on Isolde. Yes. Kit nodded to himself. A Jedi Master and a Jedi Knight where none should be, he murmured. Well, that explains that. Luminara arched a dark eyebrow at him. You'll tell us about that later, she said. Obi-Wan leaned back on his heels, feeling the Force twitch as a familiar presence approached the makeshift cell. That was all right. He had just about exhausted his conversational arsenal for the time being anyway. He could have gone on if he really had to, but there didn't seem to be much point at the moment. Excuse me, he said, tilting his head at the door behind him. They had probably sensed it too. Perhaps we can continue this conversation another time. I'm sure that would be very educational, Luminara said, when neither of the men responded. You could bring Master Skywalker and Senator Amidala with you next time. I'll see what I can do, Obi-Wan said, turning to go. Master Sergeant Cobber was reaching for the hatch control when Eeth spoke up from behind them. Master Kenobi, he said, if you truly are the Jedi Knight you claim to be, then you should remember where your loyalties lie. Even without his boots on, Obi-Wan in full robes somehow managed to look like he should have been on the recruiting poster for the Jedi Order, if such a thing had existed. Only the expression of wariness on his shadowed features detracted from the impression. He flipped his lightsaber hilt around in his hand, so that if he ignited it, the blade would be between his body and the three Jedi clustered in the doorway. Your what? Come on, Obi-Wan, get with the picture, Quinlan said. He stepped inside the cell, grimacing as the wards closed in around him, and saw Obi-Wan's gaze move to track him. I thought Amidala liked you for your brains, not your pretty face, but I'm starting to doubt her judgment here. Padme likes me for both, thank you, Obi-Wan said, but after a moment's hesitation, he clipped the lightsaber to his belt and leaned down to pull his discarded boots on. Why? Why now? Quinlan grimaced again, because he didn't think Obi-Wan actually wanted to know the answer to that question. He knew, and he kind of wished that he didn't. He glanced over his shoulder at Plo Koon, hoping the Jedi Master had an easy response. It wasn't as though no one had expected that to be the first thing Obi-Wan asked. But Plo just looked as inscrutable as ever, and just as unwilling to respond as Quinlan was. His Padawan shifted from foot to foot, clearly uncomfortable. Obi-Wan straightened up, his gaze flickering between the three of them. That bad. I'll tell you later, Quinlan compromised, because he knew that Obi-Wan would never let it go, but if he found out now, there was a good chance he would panic. Quinlan had, when Plo had told him, and he wasn't even the one who would have got... Better if he could wait until they were safely off-world. He wasn't sure Obi-Wan would give them that long, but the longer a head start they could get, the better it would go. The High Council made a decision regarding your future, Plo Koon said finally, his voice neutral. It was highly controversial, and not without precedent, but it would have done neither the Jedi nor the Republic any good. What decision? Now is not the time, young Obi-Wan. I'm not so young anymore. Obi-Wan took the cloak Quinlan handed him and pulled it on, tugging his hood up to cover his face. Every Jedi in the Order knew what Obi-Wan Kenobi looked like, but hooded and in robes, he was indistinguishable from every other knight in the temple at first glance. He didn't even feel different in the Force, which was the real kicker as far as Quinlan was concerned. The Force never lied, but it never told the whole truth, either. Are you all right, Master... Captain Kenobi? Ahsoka asked, as Obi-Wan followed Quinlan out into the corridor. Plo Koon reactivated the ray shield over the empty cell, then shut the door behind him. The sensors might show a momentary dip in power, but there weren't any security cams in the cell itself. And with luck, No one would even realize Obi-Wan was gone until the guards came to take him in front of the council come morning. Obi-Wan smiled at her. I'm better now, Padawan Tano. Just tired. The trials, she began hesitantly, then looked up at Quinlan as if waiting for him to cut her off. When he didn't, she went on. Did the Chamber of the Odeal know you weren't a Jedi? I've heard things. There had to be 1,000 stories about the Jedi trials. All of them true, and all of them wrong. Obi-Wan hesitated. It knew I wasn't a member of the Order, he said at last. It didn't really care what I called myself. He fell silent as they passed the rows of empty cells on either side of the corridor, looking at them and visibly tensing to keep from shuddering. Quinlan felt a stab of shame and grimaced. Maybe he ought to have done this a lot earlier, but he'd trusted the blasted council, more fool he. No one could have imagined that they would... Plo Koon had to move to the front of the group to open the door to the rest of the underlevels, since the security system would have recorded Quinlan activating them. Plo was a respected member of the High Council. He got privileges the rest of the Jedi could only dream of. Obi-Wan's shoulders slumped as they stepped out beyond the reach of the wards. He let out a sigh of relief that made Quinlan wince, because as bad as the cells were after a few hours, the longest period of time he'd ever spent inside with Obi-Wan, they had to be catastrophic for a powerful Force-sensitive like Obi-Wan after weeks of imprisonment. The only time he hadn't been either collared or behind wards had been during the trials themselves, and if Obi-Wan's trials had been anything like Quinlan's, then he probably hadn't had the opportunity to appreciate it. Obi-Wan's moment of relief only lasted for a few instants. Almost immediately, he was tense again, glancing around the empty corridor and fingering his lightsaber hilt. Where are the guards? I suggested they take a short walk, Plo Koon said, waving the door shut. Ahsoka, take R6. Yes, Master Plo. She fell back to the rear of the group, casting a watchful glance around. Plo moved to the front, while Quinlan kept pace with Obi-Wan. If they did get caught, then Plo was probably the best chance they had of talking their way out of the situation. Most knights wouldn't argue too much with a high counselor, even one keeping company with the most wanted man in the galaxy. Away from the high security cells, Obi-Wan said, sounding dubious. It seemed like a better idea than hitting them over the head and stuffing them in a storage closet, Quinlan pointed out. Obi-Wan shrugged. I thought the guards weren't supposed to take sides in internal disputes. The guards are individuals as well, though their duty is to the inner workings of the Order and not to the Republic, Plo reminded him. They have hearts and minds of their own behind their masks. Most of the time, Quinlan thought to himself, then winced as Obi-Wan looked at him sharply, apparently having caught the unspoken words in the Force. He didn't question it, though. Instead, all he said to Plo Koon was, "They must really like you." "I was very persuasive," Plo Koon said. "I think that your departure will go unnoticed for some time," he added. "Most of the council is otherwise occupied this evening." Plo was good enough that none of the ulterior meanings of that slipped into the Force. But Obi-Wan looked at him anyway, his rapid pace slowing for an instant. "Is what they're occupied with something I should be concerned with?" "Queen Amidala isn't the one sneaking out of enemy territory, Kenobi. I think she's fine," Quinlan said, even though he himself had no idea what the Council was up to. Rumor was that it had something to do with the invasion force, but that was the last thing Obi-Wan needed to learn about right now. The chances it had to do with Amidala directly were minuscule anyway. "And I think that we should perhaps cease speaking for some time," Plo said pointedly. Difficult though I know it is for you, young Obi-Wan. Discretion is a virtue you ought to embrace until you leave the temple grounds. Obi-Wan sighed. Now you sound like Qui-Gon, he said. But he went quiet after that. They moved quickly and purposefully through the empty corridors of the sleeping temple. It was late in Coruscant's night cycle, late enough that aside from the council and the temple guards on duty, most of the Jedi on world were asleep, or at least otherwise occupied. There were a few members of the nocturnal species in the Order that were probably still awake, but Plo had plotted a path through the temple that avoided areas they were likely to be. Although, under normal circumstances, there were dozens of ways in and out of the temple, most of them were out of the question with the temple under temporary lockdown, which still left a respectable number of options. The temple lockdown was more a matter of courtesy than real effort. Any Jedi could have gotten out of the temple without trying too hard if they had really wanted to, though in most cases, the security systems would record their departure. Obi-Wan spent most of the journey looking around, his gaze flicking quickly across the empty corridors they traversed. Quinlan didn't know if it was just because he'd been locked in that damn cell for so long, or if he was looking for something specifically. Aside from the trials, he'd been surrounded 6 deep by temple guards every time he had been out of the cells. It didn't exactly make it easy to sightsee, and there certainly wasn't much to be said for the view. "You really all right?" Quinlan muttered to him eventually, keeping his voice low. Sound traveled oddly through these halls. Obi-Wan's jaw tightened. "I don't know," he admitted. "All this, the trials, I just want to go home." He sighed. "Thank you for doing this, Quin."
"Don't thank me yet," Quinlan warned. "We're still not out of the temple, let alone off the planet."
Obi-Wan shrugged. "I can feel the Force again. That's enough for now." Quinlan glanced aside. At the time, he had agreed with the Council that cutting Obi-Wan off from the Force had seemed necessary. Not that anyone had asked him, but in retrospect, it could have been him in one of those cells not that long ago. Not for the same reasons, maybe, but Quinlan had come close enough that he knew it had been seriously discussed whether to keep him in his cell or under house arrest in his quarters. All it would have taken was 1 or 2 council members deciding he was too much of a wild card to be trusted. And he had never been considered half as dangerous as Obi-Wan was right now. He felt Obi-Wan's gaze flicker towards him, the weight of his consideration in the Force. Then Obi-Wan looked away, lengthening his stride to catch up with Plo. They followed the Keldor Master through the temple, Ahsoka a watchful presence behind them. Obi-Wan didn't speak again, nor did he take his hand away from his lightsaber, resting the fingers of one hand on the slim metal hilt as if he thought it would be taken away from him again. Only once did they come near a temple guard patrol. Quinlan barely felt the surface of the Force shimmer, with a gentle mental persuasion for the guards to hurry along on their way. There was nothing to see here. He couldn't tell who had cast it at first, then saw the set of Obi-Wan's jaw and the splayed fingers of one hand, and realized that it must have been him. Plo was frowning at him, or at least Quinlan assumed that was the expression beneath his breathing mask. "That was unnecessary, young Obi-Wan," he said, once the guards had passed them by, their echoing footsteps long gone. Obi-Wan's gaze cut towards him. "I didn't feel like pushing the matter," he said. Plo's brows drew together, but he didn't say anything else. They were close now, Quinlan knew, as they moved swiftly through the darkened corridors. They were headed for one of the smaller speeder bays, usually used by Coruscant-based Jedi who worked in the underworld. The bigger bays would probably be in use even at this hour, constantly manned by a knight on duty and a couple of maintenance droids, but this one would be empty. They were almost there when they turned a corner
and nearly walked straight into Syndralig and Shakti. Drolig and Shakti clearly hadn't been expecting to run into anyone else, and in fact had probably chosen the swing of the temple because there weren't any living quarters here, and was thus unlikely to be occupied at this time of night. They had been walking together, speaking too quietly for the sound to carry through the corridors, and both started back as they recognized Plo Koon. Instinct older and more powerful than any training made Obi-Wan freeze, drawing the Force close in an attempt to cloak himself from their sight. It wasn't actually possible to become truly invisible, with or without the Force, but there were Force tricks that came close. It nearly worked. It might have worked if Obi-Wan hadn't been cut off from the Force for as long as he had, and was handling it more clumsily than usual as a result. Shakti stopped in mid-word to Plo Koon, she and Drolig turning towards him in unison, and Obi-Wan hissed a curse through his teeth and reached up with both hands to flip back the hood of his cloak. Togruta were predators. Obi-Wan had never felt more like prey than he did in that moment, being stared down by Shakti. She had her hand on her lightsaber hilt. Drolig's green blade had hissed into existence the moment he had recognized Obi-Wan. "Captain Kenobi," said Shakti. "This is an unexpected meeting." "The feeling is mutual, Master T," Obi-Wan said, meeting her eyes. "Biological instinct bled off into the Force. They were both Jedi here, and no Jedi had crossed blades with another in centuries." Of course, there was always the question of whether or not Shakti and Drolig actually considered him a Jedi or not. Quinlan swore softly and shoved forward, only to be held back as Plo Koon swung an arm out.
"Do you intend to stop us, Master T, Master Drolig?" he inquired.
"That depends," Syndralig said, making no move to deactivate his lightsaber. "What exactly do you think you're doing, Plo? I thought the Council had come to a decision."
Drolig wasn't on the High Council, but as the commander of the Temple Guard, he would probably have been informed of whatever they'd decided to do with Obi-Wan. He was of an age with Qui-Gon, Thome, and Plo Koon. They had been friends a long time ago. Obi-Wan didn't know whether or not that still counted for anything. Probably not. Qui-Gon had been dead for 13 years ago, and Drolig wasn't that much fonder of Obi-Wan than most of the other knights in the Temple. "The Council did come to a decision," Plo Koon said. "That does not make the decision right. You ought to be aware of that, Sin." Shakti frowned, her predatory gaze still fixed on Obi-Wan. "We can't begin to defy the Council just because we disagree with the decisions that were made in that chamber," she said. "A vote is a vote, even if we are unsatisfied with the outcome." Unease crystallized in Obi-Wan's veins. He had guessed that whatever decision the Council had come to had to be bad, because Plo wasn't the sort to go against the established order. But for someone like Shakti to be visibly unhappy with it... But it was the Jedi! Even at his most cynical, he had never really believed that they would do anything worse than interrogate him and imprison him. Carbonite, maybe. It had been done before. That was a living death, but there was enough precedent for it that it shouldn't have raised this sort of reaction. Even a Force-assisted interrogation. He glanced sideways at Quinlan, hoping to get some kind of hint, but Quinn was watching Drolig and Shakti with narrowed eyes and didn't see it. "That outcome was wrong," Plo Koon said. "Even Mace knew that. We are Jedi, Shak. Our duty is not to the Council, not to the Republic, not even to the Order. Our duty is to the Force. And the Force tells me that what the Council decided
was wrong. "We swore oaths," Shakti said, her voice rising for an instant. "We're Jedi," Quinlan said quietly, making the masters look at him. "Our oaths mean nothing. Every one of us knows that." "Our oaths mean everything." "Our oaths mean nothing," Quinlan repeated. "We don't need honor. We don't need words. We don't even need faith because we have the Force. That's the only thing we need, and the Force is telling me right now that if we do this, if the Order does this, then the Jedi will cease to be. We cannot survive this." Obi-Wan turned to frown at him. "I thought I was the Oathbreaker here. That's what everyone has been calling me for the past 12 years, and now you're changing your mind." Quinlan grimaced. "Shut up, Kenobi. This doesn't have anything to do with you." "No," Obi-Wan said. "Because right now it sounds like it has everything to do with me." His dark gaze was irritated. "Not as much as you might think." "He doesn't know," Drolig said to Plo, sounding startled. "You didn't tell him?"
"Tell me what?"
Obi-Wan said. Plo raised one clawed hand.
"It isn't important now."
"Really?" Obi-Wan said. "Because it sounds to me like what you just said suggested that the decision made about me would bring down the Jedi Order." "That sounds important. I know I'm not your kind of Jedi anymore, but if it's about my life, then I think I have a right to know."
"You didn't tell him,"
Drolig said again, ignoring Obi-Wan completely. He deactivated his lightsaber, though he kept hold of the hilt.
"How could you not tell him?"
Obi-Wan hissed through his teeth and crossed his arms over his chest.
"Tell me now," he said. "If I'm going to bring down the Jedi Order, then I want to know how. I think I'm owed that after everything you people did to me."
Shakti said, "It isn't something to be repeated to a man who is no longer a Jedi." Obi-Wan met her eyes, letting his shields drop enough that she could feel his strength in the Force. He had been rated consular class as a Padawan, even if all his training had been as a knight-errant.
"I passed the trials," he said. "I am a Jedi. I'm just not your kind of Jedi. I won't ever be again."
Shakti's gold-dusted eyelids fluttered shut for an instant. "And therein lies the problem," she said. "There can be no Jedi outside the Order. It cannot be done. It has never been done."
"That's my path to walk, not yours."
"Most of the High Council does not feel that way," Shakti said. She looked at Plo Koon and echoed, "How could you not have told him?"
Obi-Wan had a bad feeling about this, but he couldn't think what kind of punishment the Council might have come up with to rate this kind of reaction.
He'd passed the blasted trials, after all. What clearer evidence did they need?
"Tell me what,"
he said again, letting his voice go soft. "You might as well tell me. It can't be half as bad as what you're making me imagine."
"Wanna bet?"
Quinlan said, turning slightly away from the others. He caught Obi-Wan by the arm, pulling him close.
"Trust me, Obi-Wan. You don't want to know."
"Yes, I do," Obi-Wan said. "It's my life at stake."
"Your life was never in danger," Shakti said. "We are Jedi. We don't kill our prisoners."
"You know," Obi-Wan said, "the more you say those words, the less meaning they have. I'm not a Padawan anymore, Masters. I'm not that boy who went to Naboo with Qui-Gon. I haven't been for a long time. I have seen things and done things that no Jedi could and remain sane. Whatever it is."
Shakti looked at him for a long moment.
then glanced at Plo Koon, something passing between them in the Force that Obi-Wan couldn't understand. Plo finally said slowly, "What was decided upon has not been done since the days of the Old Republic. It is a product of another time, another place, another people. We are not those Jedi. We have not been those Jedi for 4,000 years. Obi-Wan shook his head, not understanding. There had always been Jedi in the Order who were tempted by the dark side. That was the eternal strength of the dark side. It tempted, and once it had sunk its claws in, it corrupted. There was no escaping it once it touched your soul. Or, at least, that was what he had always been taught. Shaak-Ti wasn't wrong. Whatever else the Jedi did, there was only one crime that they executed Force users for, and Obi-Wan hadn't done that. All the accusations thrown at him, and that one hadn't been among them. Whatever his personal convictions about the state of Obi-Wan's soul, none of the other potential punishments should have upset Plo Koon this badly. "The Jedi Order is eternal," Drolling said. "We cannot separate ourselves from our ancestors. There is precedent, Plo. You can't make that any less true just because you find it distasteful." "The Jedi are eternal," Plo corrected. "The times change." Realization started to dawn. Obi-Wan shook his head again, trying to shake the niggling feeling of doubt, because it couldn't be. It couldn't be. No one in the Order would ever... "This is not the Old Republic," Plo went on. "These are not the Mandalorian Wars." "No. No. No, it can't be." "And Obi-Wan Kenobi is not Darth Revan." It was like being punched in the face. Obi-Wan jerked back so abruptly that he almost fell over, Quinlan catching him with a hand on his arm that Obi-Wan barely felt. The entire world seemed to have gone static. All he could hear was roaring in his ears, his vision almost white with panic. "Revan's cure," he choked out. "That's what the Council wants to do to me? That's what they decided?" Shaak-Ti looked away, her shame shadowing the Force. "Yoda would never permit..." "Obi-Wan," Syndralic said. "Who do you think suggested Revan's cure to the High Council? What other Jedi would dare?" Obi-Wan's legs went out from under him. He sat down hard on the marble floor, too stunned to even attempt to keep his footing, and too fast for Quinlan to catch him again. He stared up at the Masters, Plo's Padawan hovering worriedly behind Quinlan, and tried to think of something to say. "But I passed the trials. I did what he wanted." "Not everything," Plo said. Quinlan crouched down beside Obi-Wan, putting a hand on his shoulder. "Obi-Wan." Obi-Wan ignored him, staring at Plo. "Yoda wants me back in the Order so badly he's willing to rip my mind out of my skull and remake it to get the perfect Jedi Knight," he spat. Even saying the words made him shudder, his hands closing into fists. "It's an abomination! It's anathema! It hasn't been done in 1,000 years! Even the Knights of the Old Republic found it too vile to use more than 6 times! The Council would never agree, not even for Yoda." 5-4, with 3 abstentions, Shaak-Ti said. Something that might have been sympathy passed across her face, shimmering over the surface of the Force. But Obi-Wan was too stunned to comprehend it. "But I didn't do anything," Obi-Wan said, his own panic as bitter as bile in his throat. "I mean, Not like that. Not like Revan or any of the others. All I did was leave the order for something better. And I'm hardly the first knight to do that. No, Drolik said. Not the first. But the most dangerous. Why? Obi-Wan demanded. What have I done that is such a threat that even Yoda... That Yoda would... And that any Jedi would... He couldn't get the final words out, choking on them, and had to bend over and put his head between his knees. He was breathing too fast and too shallow, the edges of his vision bright and a little blurry. Quinn's hand moved to the back of his neck. Obi-Wan leaned back into the touch, trying desperately to ground himself and mostly failing. You left, Quinlan said, his voice gentle. And you passed the trials. There are Padawans who have been in the Order their entire lives who don't pass the trials, and you did. You left the Order, and you passed the trials. It isn't supposed to be possible. And for not turning to the dark side, the Council decided that I should be stripped. The words burst out before he could stop them. The greatest crime that any Force user can commit, save when the Order itself does so for whatever they think the good of the galaxy is. Because I didn't turn to the dark side. 5 Masters, Yoda himself, thought that I was beyond all hope because I believe in something other than this Order. And for that, they would destroy my mind? My soul? They wouldn't even kill me cleanly. This Order does not commit murder, Shakti said stubbornly. The Order draws the line at murder, but they're fine with ripping my mind apart, cutting out the pieces they don't agree with, and shoving something else, someone else, inside my skull instead. Even the Jedi are supposed to punish stripping with death. Obi-Wan heard his voice pitch up hysterically, but he couldn't seem to get it under control until he spit out, except when they do it for the good of the Order, apparently. He had to cover his face with his hands because he couldn't meet anyone's eyes. Revan's cure. The worst thing any Force user could do to another sentient being. Stripping. Using the Force to destroy another being's mind was the only crime that even the Jedi Order would punish with death. But there was one exception to that, and that was if the Order did it themselves. They had done it to Darth Revan 4 millennia earlier, taking away the memories of his time as a Sith and leaving behind only the parts of him that were still Jedi. It had been used a handful of other times over the centuries to Jedi who had turned to the dark side or otherwise acted against the Order. But to do that, to change what made a person, it was beyond vile. Obi-Wan would rather be dead than have that done to him. If he had known that the Council had been considering it, he would have killed himself back in his cell, even if he had had to follow that long-dead Sith's example and open his wrists with his teeth to accomplish it. Quinlan slung an arm over his shoulders and pulled him close. Obi-Wan was in too much shock to resist, leaning against him automatically, the way they had done as younglings in the creche, as Padawans on joint missions. Hey, Quinlan said softly. Are you all right? Obi-Wan stared at him. No. He could hear Plo talking to the other two masters, but couldn't make sense of any of the words. Did you know, he asked Quinlan, that they were going to... I only found out a couple of hours ago, Quinlan said. Master Plo came and told us. Me and Thom and Tra. They must have been planning something like this already, but Obi-Wan, no one on the Council saw it coming, from what Plo said. Revan's cure hasn't been used in 1,000 years. Who would dare?
It's a relic from the old Republic. It shouldn't even be legal anymore. Jocasta knew how to look it up to be sure it was still on the books. Obi-Wan dragged his fingers through his hair, feeling rather than seeing Plo's Padawan crouch down on his other side. I knew too, she confessed. My master thought you might, do this? Obi-Wan finished for her, his voice dry. Yes? He thought right. Obi-Wan rested a hand on her shoulder, saw her smile a little in response, then turned back to Quinlan.
If we get captured on our way out, kill me.
Quinlan grimaced.
And that's why I didn't want to tell you, he said.
Quin, I'm serious. Obi-Wan licked his lips. They'll use me to get to Padme. He shut his eyes.
Obi-Wan, I'm still a Jedi. I can't make that promise.
Force protect me. Obi-Wan massaged his forehead with his fingers, but he could feel clarity slowly returning to him, some of the shock starting to fade. He glanced sideways at Ahsoka, who looked a little nervous that he was going to ask her to make the same promise, but he wasn't about to do that to a kid. He probably should have known better than to do that to Quinlan. He looked up at a step near him, then Shakti's slim red hand entered his field of vision. Obi-Wan, she said. After a moment, he took her hand and let her pull him to his feet. She studied him with huge dark eyes, then said, "What did you see in the chamber of the ordeal?" Obi-Wan had the feeling that he was probably going to be asked variations on this question for the rest of his life, however long or short it turned out to be.
What I could have been?
What I am. You were a Jedi once, Obi-Wan.
I'm still a Jedi, Obi-Wan said.
It felt strange to say that after so many years denying it, but the trials had given him that, at least. He wasn't sure if he wanted it, but he had it.
I'm just not this kind of Jedi. I don't know what kind I am.
Shakti frowned a little, which Obi-Wan didn't blame her for. Frowning was the least he would have done if he had been a Jedi Master and anyone else had said that to him. And Master Ti was right. He had been a Jedi once. Her kind of Jedi. He could see Syndralig and Plo Koon watching from over her shoulder, could feel Ahsoka and Quinlan behind him. The Force sat tense around them, waiting. Obi-Wan wasn't certain that he knew for what, or if he could live with the outcome.
"Are you going to let us go?"
he asked her.
"Or are you going to try and stop us?"
She made a faint gesture of surprise.
"Try." "I won't let the Council do that to me," Obi-Wan said. "I can't. I'll fall on my lightsaber if that's the only alternative."
Shakti blinked once, slow, and then said, "Let me see it." Obi-Wan didn't have to ask what she meant. He reached down and took his lightsaber off his belt, igniting it in a flare of blue plasma that cut the air between them. She looked at it for a long moment.
"Did you ask for this?"
"No, I wouldn't have." He hesitated, then added, "I didn't think it was possible." "Neither did I," Shakti said. She nodded at him, and Obi-Wan deactivated his lightsaber and returned it to his belt. "You're an enemy of the Republic, Captain Kenobi."
"Yes."
"Some things are more important than the Republic, Shak," Plo Koon said. "The Republic will not fall because of one man. The Jedi Order will." Dralek let out a breath.
"The Order has withstood a lot of storms, Plo,"
It will not withstand Revan's cure being used once more. Not on a night the Force has judged innocent before half the Order, Plo said. You know that as well as I, Sin. Drolleg shook his head. Master Voss, Padawan Tano. I know what I'm doing, Quinlan said, crossing his arms. We're Jedi. We have to be better than the Sith. If that means going against the Council, then so be it. I can live with that. I can't live with knowing this is happening and not doing anything to stop it.
And you, young one? Shuk Ti asked Ahsoka, who stirred uneasily under the force of her gaze.
Do you understand what you're doing? Commit this crime and there is no going back.
Ahsoka swallowed, but said, I know what I'm doing. This is my choice, Masters. We're Jedi. That means we have to do what is right, even when it's not easy, even when it seems like it goes against everything we're supposed to believe. And this is wrong. We have to do what's right, she repeated.
Shaak Ti stared at her for what felt like a long time. Then, with the slow, deliberate movement of a predator, took a step back from Obi-Wan.
Not even Yoda should have done what was done, she said. Don't make me regret this, Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan was too stiff with surprise to move until Quinlan grabbed his arm again, dragging him forward a few paces.
Come on, Kenobi, he muttered. Let's not stick around and wait for her to change her mind.
Obi-Wan took a step forward, then turned and looked back.
Thank you, he said.
Shaak Ti shut her eyes, then opened them again. May the Force be with you, Obi-Wan.
You're going to need it, Drolleg added softly. We all are.
To his credit, Obi-Wan made it all the way to the speeder bay before he collapsed again, which was more than Quinlan probably could have managed under the same circumstances. The moment the hangar doors shut and locked behind them, he sank back against the nearest wall, burying his face in his hands. Plo Koon gave him a sympathetic look, while Ahsoka ran forward to check the speeder they had prepared earlier.
Obi-Wan, there is no time, he said. It is not wise to linger any longer than we must. We have already lost too much time.
I just need a moment, Obi-Wan said, his voice muffled.
Force protect me.
Plo looked like he was going to press the issue, but Quinlan jerked his head toward the speeder, and after a moment, Plo turned away to follow Ahsoka.
Obi-Wan,
he said quietly, crouching down beside him and gripping his shoulder. Obi-Wan was shaking under his hands. A fine tremor echoed in the Force, where his panic was leaking out past his normally tight shielding.
I just need a moment, Obi-Wan repeated,
then swore quickly and fluently in at least 4 different languages, ending with, By the Force!
It isn't going to happen, Quinlan told him.
Obi-Wan let out a shuddering breath and looked up at him, tears streaking his cheeks.
Revan's cure, Quinn? What in the names of all our ancestors did I do to deserve that?
Nothing, Quinlan said. You didn't do a damn thing, Obi-Wan. No one deserves that. Probably not even Revan deserved that, and he was actually a Sith Lord. Why do you think we broke you out?
Obi-Wan just shook his head, looking exhausted.
Quinlan straightened up and offered Obi-Wan his hand. Come on. I don't think you want to stay on planet any longer than you have to.
Obi-Wan stared up at him, then scrubbed one hand beneath his eyes and let Quinlan pull him to his feet.
I didn't think the Order could surprise me anymore, he said. I really didn't need to be proven wrong.
Obi-Wan, from what I heard, no one on the Council saw it coming either, Quinlan said, as they started toward the waiting speeder.
They were arguing about it for hours before half of them had to take off for the Senate building. They only took a break when Yoda visited you, then went right back to it.
That will teach me to mouth off at Yoda, Obi-Wan said, grimacing. You mouthed off to Yoda?
Well, I wouldn't have if I'd realized he was thinking about stripping me, Obi-Wan said.
Consider the thought, and said.
That's a lie. I would have said it either way, because it needed to be said.
Stars above, I'm almost afraid to ask, Quinlan said. I think we're all right now, Master Plo, he added, as they reached the speeder.
Ahsoka was already perched in the front seat, leaning over the side of the speeder to speak to Plo. He came towards them as they approached.
Don't blame the Order, Obi-Wan, he said. What was decided was not done.
Would it have been? Obi-Wan said. Soft and dangerous.
Perhaps. Perhaps not. No one can speak of lives that have never come to pass.
He laid a hand on Obi-Wan's shoulder.
May the Force be with you, young Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan blinked at him.
You're not coming.
I am not, Plo said solemnly.
My place is with the Jedi Order still.
There is a rot somewhere in our midst that must be found and destroyed, and I will not leave that task to another.
Obi-Wan swallowed.
Even if it's Yoda? If he ordered this... His voice caught, the Force shimmering with his fear.
Quinlan reached out for him again, but Obi-Wan sidestepped him this time, raising one hand to cover his mouth.
This goes deeper than you know, Obi-Wan, Plo said. Deeper than any of us realize, I believe.
He paused.
And that is why Ahsoka is going with you, and not remaining here.
What? Obi-Wan said blankly.
He swung around to look at Quinlan, who shrugged in response.
Plo had told him this already.
Master Plo,
it's my choice, Ahsoka said quickly, leaning over the side of the speeder.
Why? Obi-Wan asked, his voice frank.
I've walked this path before, Padawan Tano. It's not an easy one. I wouldn't recommend it.
Because it isn't right, Ahsoka said. The Council did this, and other things, too. And they think they're making the right choices, and they're not. How can I trust them after that? How can any Jedi?
Obi-Wan shook his head.
I was almost a knight when I left. You can't be more than half-trained, if that.
Ahsoka looked a little offended, but before she could respond, Plo said,
A Padawan can have more than one master, Obi-Wan.
What?
Obi-Wan said again. Then realization made his eyes widen.
You can't be serious, Master Plo. I'm not even a knight.
I know what you said to Yoda, Plo interrupted gently. You are a Jedi Knight, Obi-Wan, even if you no longer call the Order home. You are as fit to train a Padawan as any other Jedi.
Obi-Wan stared at him, then turned to look at Ahsoka. She smiled back, thin and a little nervous, and said,
I don't mind.
Padme's going to kill me, Obi-Wan muttered. You two are going to get along like a house on fire.
He glanced at Quinlan.
At least she's met you before.
What, you're not going to try and talk me out of it? Quinlan asked, raising his eyebrows.
I can't think of a single occasion in 30 years where I've actually succeeded in convincing you not to do something,
Obi-Wan said dryly.
I thought I'd save my breath.
Unflattering as it might be, Quinlan did have to give him that one.
Obi-Wan turned back to Plo.
Master, the Order will crucify you for this. You're certain you won't come?
My loyalty is to the Jedi, Plo said. If there is any way to save the Order, then I must find it. The path you walk is not for me, young Obi-Wan.
He looked at Quinlan, who just nodded. They had already said everything there was to say to each other when they had agreed to do this. Obi-Wan looked down, twisting his hands in the sleeves of his cloak. "When I left the Order, I knew what I was doing," he said. "I didn't know it would lead me here, but I knew what I was doing. I knew what it meant for me. I didn't know it would..." He glanced around, raising one hand half-heartedly to gesture at the hangar. "You could not have known, Obi-Wan," Plo said gently. "What has happened to the Order was not your doing." "No?" His mouth twisted. "But I sure as blazes didn't help. What I became, what I chose to be, I don't know if what I am is supposed to exist. Is it even possible to be a Jedi without the Order, Master?" Plo laid a hand on his shoulder. "If you were not meant to exist, Obi-Wan, then you would not have survived the trials. Remember that. The Force does not compromise. The Force does not believe in mercy. This path has been laid before you." Obi-Wan swallowed, then nodded. "Where I'm going, Master Plo, your Padawan won't be safe." He glanced at Ahsoka again. She looked steadily back, teeth set against her lower lip. "The Jedi were created to be living weapons," Plo said. "We are no good sheathed and set aside for safekeeping. Danger is the path we were born to walk upon." Obi-Wan bowed his head. "Master Plo, I don't..." "What was done to you should not have been done," Plo said. "Not by me, not by the Council, and not by the Order." He sighed. "And, Obi-Wan, I am sorry." "For what?" "I think you'll know very soon," Plo said. He squeezed Obi-Wan's shoulder and stepped back. "You should not delay any longer." "Plo," Quinlan said, leaning back against the speeder. "I know you want to stay as long as you can, but do you remember the rendezvous points?"
"I remember," Plo Koon said.
"Thom knows that I will be in contact with him." Obi-Wan's head jerked up. "Thom's in on this too?"
"Like anything gets by him," Quinlan said.
Then had to take a hasty step out of the way, as Ahsoka suddenly vaulted out of the speeder and ran past him to hug Plo.
"Master..."
Plo Koon hugged her back.
"Ahsoka."
She sniffed a little as she stepped back from the hug. "Will I ever see you again?"
"What does your heart tell you, young one?"
"I hope so," she said. Then her eyes fluttered shut for a moment, the Force gathering around her, and she added, "Yes, I guess."
"Then we will see each other again," Plo said, resting a hand on her shoulder.
Ahsoka ducked her head, obviously fighting back tears. Her decision, Quinlan knew, but not an easy one. His own had involved a lot of soul-searching. Hers, no less. More, maybe.
"Now, be brave," Plo said. "Be brave, and don't look back. Don't look back."
Ahsoka hugged him again, hard, and let Plo turn her back toward the speeder. Plo wrapped the folds of his cloak around himself as they all clambered in.
"May the Force be with you," he said.
Ahsoka bit her lip and didn't look back as the speeder rose gently off the hangar floor and slid towards the open doors. But Quinlan did. Plo was a lonely figure, standing in the midst of the empty hangar with his robes wrapped around himself. Shadow did the dim lights, his face hidden.
"May the Force be with you, Master," Quinlan murmured to himself.
and tried not to think about what he was walking away from as they left the Jedi Temple behind them.